Coming to you from across the planet via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and all other listening platforms where podcasts can be heard. We are also syndicated courtesy of WNJH Radio. Welcome everyone to the Dan Morrow Show. I am Dan Morrow. With me is my son Brendan today, which is a special treat, and a man who really needs no introduction. It's the legendary Tommy Chong. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. How's everybody there?
We're good. You know, my son and I, we're both musicians, so you know we're kind of out of work for a while. So, you know, we're.
Are you kidding? You're going to work harder than you've ever worked in your life.
Do you think so?
Oh, yeah, it's called woodshed practice. Learn
nonstop, literally create, nonstop.
Right. Fix the instruments. Everything that was wrong that you one of these days you're going to fix, now you've got no excuse. Now you can.
He's right.
Work harder than you do. It's just like when a guy retires, you know. A lot of guys say, oh, I can't wait for my retirement. They have no idea. Because when you retire, there's no beginning or end. It's just one constant thing. It's like wake up or sleep. Because you're constantly doing. You know, and if you don't, then you die. So
that's true. That's absolutely true. Yep. Because you need that purpose. You got to have a purpose. What's your purpose been lately?
Enjoying what I got. You know, I worked so hard to get here, mm-hmm. and then I realized I'm here. You know, so many, especially you know, like road music and.
I'm losing you. I don't know if it's my phone or if I lost you.
I get terrible Wi-Fi.
Oh, right I'm now? Sorry. I'm sorry. I hear you now. You sound good.
Yeah, I'm in a weak Wi-Fi zone.
Oh.
But anyway, what I was saying what was I saying? I forgot now.
I was asking what you were doing. You're appreciating life now, and I think that's happening with a lot of people, especially a lot of comedians, a lot of musicians who've traveled all their lives and don't know what it's like to just be home.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because you spend your whole life on the road, literally. And it's always, you're always waiting for, you know, you buy the nice home, but you very seldom live in it. You know, the help have more connection with your house than you do, you know, and that's what I found out.
Very true. Very true. The old cliche, the old Joe Walsh song, you know, I have a mansion, I forget the price, I've never been there, but they tell me it's nice.
Yeah, that's a Joe Walsh, yeah.
Yeah.
I like Joe. He's a great guy.
He's my son's idol. My son looks like Joe.
Really?
Joe is the man, yeah.
Oh, he looks like Joe. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, he plays like him, makes the faces. It's a now you're.
Oh no, Joe's great, man. We have a lot of fun. I'm kind of the beginning. One time he was on the Howard Stern show. I think it was a regular or something. And Howard says, "You know Joe Walsh," and I said, "No, that's not Joe Walsh."
Do you know what? I heard that episode.
You did?
I heard that episode when you were on that day, and I remember it. And I actually told my son about it because Joe was doing midnights, and he was putting some. He walked into the studio to put some carts away or something. And he was trying to tell you that you got. I even remember where your party was. He said, "Don't you remember we partied at Jimmy Panko's house?"
Yeah. I was just playing with him, but he got all serious.
Yeah, because it dawned on you. You were like, that really is Joe Walsh. Now, you were a musician in your own right, and you were a very good musician. I see you as a hollow body guy.
Depends. I'm whatever's there, guy. You know? That's why I had a hard time collecting guitars, you know, because it just goes against my whole nature, you know. In fact, my first few years of my career, I borrowed a guitar. I never even owned one. I was never serious. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, sometimes we cut out. No, I...
No, and now I lost you. I lost him. He's probably telling me the best story ever.
Yeah.
He's probably still talking too. Let me just chill. You know what? I lost the whole phone call. I'm hoping he'll call back. Where I can call him. Let me just give him a call. See what's going on. Unless he's still talking, let's get on the voicemail. I don't know. Oh. Yeah. Oh, man. We lost him. But, you know, I'm going to keep my ringer on in case he calls back. There he is. Tommy.
Yeah,
there you go. There you go. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's just this Wi-Fi. This shit happens all the time.
We were talking about your early guitars and how you had to borrow it. You were with, you have quite a musical history and a very good background. You helped discover Michael Jackson. Not many people know that.
Oh, yeah. No, we actually discovered them. They opened for us in Chicago. They won a high school contest, and the prize was opening for Jerry Butler and Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers.
And that was your band?
That was my band, yeah. Hmm. And we were there in their first gig ever. And, oh, man, it did take a genius to figure out that Michael Jackson was a genius. He was incredible. He was the only guy I knew that grew into a little kid. He started out as a man.
Grew up into a little kid.
He was fully grown when he was 8 years old, 9 years old when I met him. He was more man than anybody. And then as he got older, he got younger. Next thing you know, when he died, he was like 8 years old.
Very true. That's very true. Was did you ever get close to him? Did like him and Ray Don? Because I remember hearing a story that they used to play together at one time.
Well, they slept in the same apartment one time because when we discovered him, Bobby had an apartment in Detroit, close to Motown. And so Bobby told Jackson 5 and the father, "Come on, you stay at my apartment." You know, so and my daughter and my first wife and my other daughter, both of my daughters happened to be staying there at the same time, and so they all jammed in together, and the Jackson 5 stayed there for about a month before Barry Gordy got around to auditioning, and then once he auditioned, and the rest is history. I was the guy that Joe Jackson brought me the contract to read. Because I was the only lawyer-looking guy they knew.
Well, I saw the pictures back then. Yeah, you had the glasses, the hair slicked back. You looked very...
Yeah. I was and the whitest guy they knew. They're all from Gary, Indiana. And so they said, "What do you think?" You know, Bobby Taylor and Joe brought me the contract. And I didn't even look at it. It was a seven-year, you know, the typical... They get everything, and you get nothing, and then but they'll make you famous, and that's what they did, you know. And Motown had a school then, you know, like a finishing school. They taught you how to do stage, you know, the dance,
right,
and mic work, and how to dress, and how to talk, and in between numbers, and that they taught everything.
Yeah, that was all Barry Gordy. He ran a tight ship. He ran a really tight ship.
He still does. You know, he's still around, 90 some odd years old. And his big problem is, what girl is he going to end up with?
And you've played, so you played for a while before joining up with Cheech Marin, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I was a guy, I'm a weird guy. I can do a lot of things, but I don't consider myself any one of those things that I can do.
Right.
Like, I can play guitar, but I don't consider myself a guitarist. In fact, when I met a real guitarist, his name is Gay DeLorme, he was one that wrote Eureka My Eye with us and a ton of other songs, you know. When I met him, he did that old guitar trick, you know, say, "Oh, hey, can I try your guitar for a minute?" You know that
right,
trick.
Right.
And then they take it and they do something with the amp. And they do something. The next thing you know, the guitar is sounding. You've never heard it sound that good before.
Right.
Ever.
Tweaking your settings for you.
it literally. I said, okay, I'm going to be a comedian now, you know. because here's this guy, he could play better than anybody I've ever heard. You know, Lenny Bro, ever hear of Lenny Bro?
Mm-mm.
If you haven't, check him out online.
Lenny Bro.
Lenny, B-R-E-A-U, he's French-Canadian. He's gone now, but he's one of the... He's the kind of guitar player... He used to go down to Nashville just to show off a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. He'd go down there and he'd play in a little club. That's your trick. They go to a little club and they say, "You mind if I sit in?" And say, "Oh, okay." And the next thing you know, they're blowing everybody away.
Right. Can I sit in? I dabble a little. Let me see. Let me just try.
Yeah. Oh, what do you play there? Oh, is that a Gibson? Oh, let me try it. Yeah.
Like a pull
next
shark.
You know, Lenny Bro. When he played in Nashville, Chet Atkins, halfway through his set, Chet Atkins would stand up and tell the audience, shut up, because it was a beer bar, you know?
Right.
And he'd talk to me, "Shut up, you're listening to Genius. You have no idea what you're listening to. So shut up." I was there one night, he did that. It cracked me up, man. But that's the kind of guitar player Gay DeLorme was. I mean, he was. And then he helped me with the comedy, too. Because when I met him, I was still trying to. I got fired from Motown. That's why I was in Vancouver working in my own club, and we had an after-hours club.
I have to ask why you got fired.
I got fired because I had to get a green card.
Oh, really?
And at the time, Motown, the lackeys, the workers from Motown had no idea what a green card was.
Right.
And so they thought I was, the road manager thought I was just stuffing off or something. So he tried to, he did. He says, if you miss Saturday, I had to go back Saturday for an interview. I had owned my own club, or written my hit song. I'd done all that, you know. And I had, the band was basically mine, even though Bobby Taylor, you know, was the head guy. And so when the road manager started ragging on me, you know, treating me like a sideman,
okay,
I just didn't have the, I didn't have the energy to argue with him or try to explain anything. Mm-hmm. I just looked at him. You know, it was ordained anyway.
So why? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got fired, and the thing is, I had my girlfriend and our illegitimate child in the motel. And so I couldn't stay in Detroit. I had to go back and get him. And so I had to fly back. I got a ticket to fly back to the gig. It was Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And so then the road manager, and I thought maybe the band would stand up for me. You know, it would all say, "Well, if he's fired, we're fired." You know that. Right.
That was Cherry Hill. But, you said Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Yeah.
That's 20 minutes. That's 20 minutes from us right now. We're in Hamilton, about 30 minutes from Atlantic City, 30 minutes from Philadelphia. We're like right in the middle.
Yeah, we're playing the gig there, and so I show up, and the guy said, "I told you you're fired if your missions are, you know." So I said, "Well, I got to get my stuff." He's like, "You get your stuff and get out of here." So I'm getting my stuff and get my amp and the band. They're sitting there waiting to play the set. And they could have saved me.
Right.
But they never.
No.
They never. They all no eye contact, you know, just like better him than me.
Wow.
You know, it was a shitty gig. It was with Chris Clark. It was like, we're playing, you know, some Beatle tunes, you know, it was nothing but we had, you know. What happened, Smokey took Bobby, and that's what Motown used to do. They would grab the best singer and then separate him from the band, and then they would have just one guy to deal with, you know,
right,
instead of five. But anyway, the next day, Barry Gordy called me up, and he says, of course you're not fired, Tom, you know, it was a mistake. And so I told Barry Gordy, I said, no, I think I'm going to stay fired. I told him, I said, I want to become a Barry Gordy. I don't want to work for one.
Right.
And he said, I can dig that. And so he gave me a nice little severance pay. And then I took my girlfriend and my baby, and we went to California. I was going to become a songwriter. And then I got to California, and then the club started. And that's how I was making money. I still had the nightclubs up in Canada. But they were starting, they needed some help. So my girlfriend and I, we went up to Vancouver, and that's when I started the improvisational group with in a strip club for strippers.
Okay.
And then Cheech and I, that's how we learned our comedy chops there.
So
I've done a lot of things, but, you know, I don't consider myself good at anything, but, you know, care a lot.
Okay, I take it. But you are a Renaissance man in many ways, so you can look at it like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you and Cheech played the circuits, and at some point you guys did something that for me is groundbreaking, and I absolutely love it, but it was just a common thing to do back then, and you made albums. And I don't think there's anything more funny or just more endearing to me than those albums. It's those albums that made me do what I want to do. And I, you know, as a musician,
sure.
I do more audio stuff than, I've always wanted to be a filmmaker, but it was cheaper to do video audio stuff, get a tape recorder and stuff.
Yeah.
And
so much fun.
I had those Bill Cosby records. My friend Tommy Dixon turned me on to your cassette. I had the cassette of Your Greatest Hit.
Oh yeah.
And Basketball Jones, Dave, Sister Mary Elephant, all that stuff. And all I can imagine is you guys in the studio just going crazy and visually what you're creating subconsciously, because it's all subjective. I don't know what Sister Mary Elephant really looks like, but in my mind, it's hysterical. And I think that's what made those albums so special.
Absolutely. Especially when you saw us live, and then you see Cheech become Sister Mary Elephant. Oh, he was so funny. Cheech, he could play a girl in a heartbeat and be so funny. Well, you know, it was all ordained, you know. Like Cheech and I, we're just playing open mic nights, you know. And we got to be regular at the Troubadour, and so it got to the point where the Troubadour phoned me up and said, "Are you guys going to come down and do a free gig?" You know, they had reservations for the Cheech and Chong. But I knew that you just had to, you know, just do your gig, you know, and be seen, and people, and the way things will happen for you.
And it was great for you guys, because you're just a duo. If the band never showed up, it saves me time to get another band. Well, Doug Weston was handling all that at that time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Doug Weston was the guy who was a crooked arm. And remember he got shot or something?
I don't know. I forget his story.
Oh, yeah. He got shot. He had a bum arm. He was a DJ, right? Doug Weston.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, they're having troubles now. You hear about that?
Everyone's having trouble.
Internet.
Yeah.
But they're on the internet because they're it's a private owner, so they don't get any bailout money, you know. So,
how long do you think this is going to last? Because they just added another month to you guys. You guys are you're still in California.
Yeah.
That's you guys aren't getting out until August. August.
Yeah, well, even then, it's you know, we're in your seats, man. Especially me, I'm an old guy, so I got to stay away from everybody. You know? No, it's very biblical. It's going to last. Well, it's going to last. We'll never know what normal is like again.
Right, and you've had health issues in the past.
What's that?
You've had health issues in the past.
Oh yeah. I've had them. But you know, luckily, I've been a bodybuilder all my life, so I got a body that can take it.
Right.
Anybody else, I'd be dead a long time ago.
Yeah.
I recovered from cancer, from rectal cancer.
Oh wow!
And usually, that's a death sentence. But I got the operation and I did it well. Yeah, I'm doing well.
Good. And did you have anything planned before the quarantine started? Did you have anything booked?
The weirdest thing, man, I not only since the comedy, but I was working on a TV pilot. And because the writers in that didn't listen to me, I got what I call a yaya.
Right.
You know, because he said, hey, you want to do a TV show? You know, they want to produce it? I was telling him, yeah. Well, let's see what you got. So they got writers and they wrote a whole thing. And I was just waiting for them to put in, you know, where me and, that's my wife said I wanted to work with, you know. I wanted to do like a Lucy or a Ball or Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of show, you know.
Right.
And they wrote a whole different thing, you know, just like TV writers do, you know. And so I my wife and I got in a big fight because she wanted to be the producer. She didn't want to work. She just wanted to be send my ass out to work. And so I mixed that and so I turned down a lot of things. And then for some reason I came up with this idea of a drive-in movie theater where the cars are permanent. And what you do, you drive up or you take a bus up and...
you sit in the car.
And you get your own private car.
That's an awesome idea.
Yeah, you get your own private car and it's cleaned and in between shows and that. And like, if you're homeless, I was going to have, like, 24-hour movies in the drive-in. So if you just wanted to stay in the car and watch movies, you could do it for, you know, a reasonable price. So anyway, I wrote it down. I won't say I drew anything. I wrote it down. And I wrote a bunch of ideas down, man. And they're just perfect for this time. I might be the guy that saves the planet. Because they always said that Hemp is going to save the planet.
Yeah.
And I really believe the ideas that I got, you know, because right now there's no industry.
No.
You know, because you can't have large crowds.
Right.
If you can't have a large crowd, you got no income coming in.
No.
You know. And I'm doing okay because, you know, I'm doing cameos and doing, you know, I'm getting checks from the movies and all that. You know, that's still happening. But it's not going to change overnight to back to where it was. I don't think it'll ever come back to where it was. I think the life that we knew at one time is changing, it's going to change radically. You know?
So... Well, would you consider making hemp masks? Because I know masks are big right now.
Oh, no, there's enough masks being made. I think what I got to make now is I got to go back to my roots and we'll make some music. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, really?
Because that's something, that's something I can do. I came up with this great idea. Like that, you know, I was on Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah.
You know, and I was the oldest guy on Dance with the Stars, and I saw it typically the other day. But I was really too bad. Man.
No, you look great, and you still look great. You've really held up.
Yeah, well, I realized the one dance that I can't do with my wife, and it bugged me forever, was a tango. Because a tango, you have to know what you're doing, the guy. And you not only have to know your part, you have to know the female part. Now, when I was in Dancing with the Stars, I had a professional dancer kind of back me, you know, held me up, you know, and made it look good. Made me look a lot better than I thought I really was. Made me look like I knew what I was doing.
Right.
But when you're dancing tango, it's like playing guitar. You can't be a lead guitar unless you know that guitar. You know, you can't take it. You can take a few, maybe a few solos, but, you know, you have to know your act. And that's what I've been doing with tango. And then I realized that you can have fun dancing tango by yourself. And so I've been working on a routine where I would do tango moves like you would do a yoga class or a dance class. And then I made another discovery that really, really opened my eyes. I realized that you can dance tango, the dance itself, to reggae music. It's a perfect match. Because the only problem I had with reggae was that they never really had a dance that you could do that did more than just bob up and down, you know?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's a regular thing. But if you could combine tango moves with reggae music, now you're creating something that everybody is going to want to learn how to do because it's hard and it looks so good, and to the simplest music, so you don't need this tango orchestra playing, tango music, period.
Right.
Because that's a lot of problems, because with tango music, there's very little call for, you know, it's not like reggae. You know, reggae is worldwide. Tango, you can find a tango orchestra maybe in a big big city, but it's not like a reggae, you know.
Right.
So combining the two.
Well, now you have to sit, you'll have to stand 6 feet apart from each other, though, now.
When that ends. No, that was the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it by yourself.
Well, why don't you post this? Why don't you post this on YouTube and do a podcast and stuff? I'm sure if you talk to like
that.
Joe Rogan or something, he would hook you up with like sponsors and stuff. People would love to see this.
I'm way ahead of you. We had a podcast, you know, before there were podcasts, and then it was my son. He owns a surf camp, so he left me to go surfing, and I had to go do live shows with Cheech. But we're in the midst of putting a studio together again in my house because I can't go out, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that. And you're right. I'm going to not only post it, but I'm going to do a daily lesson workout.
You should
for guys and girls. And I got my kids doing it. In fact, that's what one son. I won't give him any money unless he learns how to play. Learns how to dance tango. He's my. He's my organ player. Yeah. No. Hey. I recommend this for every guy and girl. Girls, it gives you the nicest body. It gives you the nicest butt because you're dancing in heels and you're usually going backwards. And so the muscles that you use just gives you the greatest body.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, you have to have your balance. You can't fake it. You know, like guitar solos.
Right.
You have to know the steps. And not only know your steps, you got to know her steps. And if she's like stumbling around, then you can either teach her or just dance by yourself. Because I'm coming up with routines now where you dance solo or with another guy. Because back in the day, when tango first started, guys danced with guys because it was a African dance that sailors did. And they never really had the girls. And that's why the dance started in the brothels, because they could go rent a girl, teach her how to dance, and then have a female partner, you know? And so that's where that's why the dance started in the brothels.
You're really all in on this.
Oh, man, I know everything there. I studied it when I was in prison.
and I studied the history, and it's incredible. It was originally in Africa. It still probably is. It was a mating dance that the teenage Africans would dance to meet, you know, their opposite sex or the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very healing dance, and it's all about respect. It's all about respect. There's two things that I do in my life that require decorum. You know, where you have to. Golf is one of them.
Right.
I consider golf the world religion. It's a religion that everybody practices in the world, and they have the same rules for everybody. It's like a religion,
mm-hmm.
and because you're playing, but really, you're playing against yourself.
Exactly.
You know, and tango is basically the same thing. If you don't have your balance, and if you're not doing it properly, you can't dance it. And so the greatest thing about tango and golf is that you can do it well into your later years, as people do. Like Nicholson is still playing,
right?
Once in a while. And tango, if you look at the feet, you can't tell how old or young they are. And so that's basically what my aim for the podcast is. One of them.
Yeah, well, you got to do something. You got to get something out there. You know, you look great for your age. There are people my age. I'm younger than you, and for your age, there are so many people, even my age, that look like they're just falling apart. And to see someone like you setting the example and actually raising the bar, saying, "Look, you know, when you're this age, you know,
there's no reason." Yeah, like when I was in Buenos Aires, you know, and you should see the old tangos, the tangos, and what they do, they dance all night. The milongas start around 10 at night, and then they go to 6 in the morning every night, and it's incredible. And the oldest people on the planet. I mean, of course, you know, it's kind of like a tropical in a way, you know, where, you mm-hmm. know, it's too hot to do anything in the daytime, so everything happens at night. But it keeps you from drinking. You can't drink or get comatose when you dance. And you got to be in shape. You got to look good. And you got to be aware of what you're doing. You know, it's not automatic.
Right.
When you're dancing tango, it's a language. You're asking ladies to do certain things, and they're saying, "Okay, I can do this, and I can do this too." And then it's a combination. Oh man, it's a jazz. It's exactly the same jazz. You know, you get a theme, and then you go up and you do it. You're okay.
Now, do you need special shoes for that, or are you just are they scuffed? Or are they just regular shoes that are scuffed at the bottom? Are they dance shoes?
No. Yeah. You need dance shoes. I use thick socks when I dance. I don't use shoes. I either barefoot. A lot of times it's good to walk around barefoot because you need to use all your toes. You know, you got to feel the ground with your heels and your toes.
Mm-hmm.
And like even when I'm not dancing, I'll do a toe exercise, you know, to keep my toes limber because that's your balance.
Right,
and then there's a tango walk. Go on, Google Argentine tango, and then they give lessons, and then go for the walk. Go for the basics. Go right away for the basics.
Argentine tango.
Argentine tango. Yeah, and then you check out the walk, the tango walk. You know, there'll be a class, and they'll show you the tango walk. And what it is that the power comes from the rear leg, where you push off.
Right.
And the front leg is there's no weight on the front leg. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you can you steer the front leg to where you want it to go. And then you learn how to walk. And you it's a tough thing to do. Like, I've known dancing tangos, you know, it took them 10 years to learn the proper walk. Because you got to keep your knees together. It's like walking a tightrope. and you got to do all this in time to the music. Well, you do it. When you get on the lessons, they'll show you everything.
I don't know. You're making me tired just listening to it. It sounds like a workout.
Neither of us dance.
No, it is.
Neither of us dance at all.
We just rock with the guitar back and forth. I mean, that's it. Just
I know, but this is what I've been telling my son today. You know, when you learn how to tangle,
I got to work my toes, man.
You hold the key to the most beautiful women on the planet. I swear to God, if you just looking like a tang girl, I walked in a room, I just looked like a dang girl. I had the most beautiful women come up to me and say, will you dance with me? You know, will you see the dance with me? Because I just look, because the whole thing, good tango dancers look for good tango dancers, you know, because it's such a tough job. Well, I'm playing jazz. It's the same thing as playing jazz.
Right.
You know, just because you know how to pick up a guitar or do chords, you can't sit in with anybody, you know, because they'll pull up some tunes, they'll make it tough. They'll put you through the test. And if you pass the test, then you can play. Tango's the same way. If you don't know what you're doing, man, you're dancer.
You can't bullshit your way through tango.
You cannot bullshit your way through any of the Latin dances, but especially tango. When I started dancing salsa, because my wife, I'm still chasing after her. She's so gorgeous. It makes me.
She's beautiful. I saw the pictures of you guys.
She takes 3 dance classes a day. She does ballroom. She does dance. Well, she hasn't been doing tango. She's just been doing ballroom and ballet. And these are like hour long classes. And so that body is just incredible. Incredible. And when she started dancing, you know, it was something that she would do without me. And so when the first time I saw her dance salsa, I got so jealous I couldn't stand myself. And so I grabbed her teacher and said, teach me. And so we went on a cruise. We went on a salsa cruise, just me and the teacher and, you know, a class of people. And it was great. I learned how to dance salsa, but it took a lot. It took years. It took 5 years to really get to the point where I could, you know, go on Dance with the Stars.
Right.
That's what got me there. But I'm telling you, tango will, especially for young guys, because it teaches you, first of all, it teaches you how to walk.
Right.
You learn how to walk like a man, you know? And you have to stand up straight. You can't slouch.
No.
You know?
Well, how old are you? How old are you, Tommy?
I'll be 82 in a couple of days.
82?
Yeah.
See, that's why you're such an example. You're also an example. There, as you said before, there's people that are in their 50s or 60s that once they retire, they think their feet are going to hit the beach of Myrtle Beach or the beach of Maui, and they're just going to relax. But you get idle and you get restless and you find no purpose, and that's when you die, like you said. And to see you at 82 still doing dance, talking about it so passionately, and still still aspirations to even perfect it. I love that.
Well, yeah, like I said, like jazz, you know, I mean, once you learn, what you can do with a tune, you know, then all of a sudden that you're not just playing an old boring tune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time you play it, it can come out different. And that's what I learned about life, you know, just because, there's perks when you get older. I'm learning them. For instance, as a grandfather, I don't have to talk. No one listens to me anyway.
No one listens.
I don't have to entertain. I don't have to talk. I'm the guy they take care of. Is Grandpa okay? Well, don't get him in the sun. Put him over here. You want something to eat? Grab it here. I'll get you a plate. I love it, man.
I want
to get all this service.
That's all. Now, I want you to think about that, but I also want you to think back, obviously, back to that time when you were fired, and I'm assuming where you were playing in Cherry Hill had to be the Latin Casino. And
I want, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, Jackie Wilson actually had the stroke. He had a stroke on stage at the Latin Casino.
Well, that's what it was. Oh.
Yeah, it was there, and he remained in a nursing home for the longest time. But I want you to think of that moment and really remember how you felt at that moment, and then ask yourself, did you ever think you'd be where you are right now? You look out your window right now, and it's far different than Motown. It's far different than...
Oh, no. Well, you got to remember, see, I was raised very, very poor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my family, we got split up when toddler, I guess 2 or 3 years old, my mother got TB, and so she got quarantined. You talk about quarantine. She was quarantined for like 5 years.
Right. Tuberculosis was bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my dad, he just got back from the war, and, you know, he was a young single guy, and he had some issues that he got, you know, in the war. And so all the kids had to be put in an orphanage, like my brother and myself and my sister. We were all put in the Salvation Army home. And so but before I went to the home, I was in a hospital. I had surgery because they checked us all for, you know, TB, and then they found a little pleurisy thing on my lung. And so I ended up in the dental hospital for almost a year. And that's what my legs never got developed properly. That's why I couldn't, you know, excel in sports like my brother did. Mm-hmm. But and that's one of the reasons I ended up being able to, you know, do music, because I'm a natural musician, you know, I got a ear.
Right.
And the family got together, we were like, and then I just found out lately that I'm 8% Native Indian.
Oh, really?
And so that meant my mother was 20% or 25%. And that means my grandmother was half. And that was a big secret in our life. So we really grew up like Native kids. You know, I got a picture hanging in my bathroom of my brother and myself, my sister. I'd just gotten out of the hospital, and we were in our house. We just got a little dog, and it's a field. It's not a lawn. It's a field. It was like a sharecropper's cabin. You know, outdoor plumbing, wood stove for eating and cooking, and this is in Calgary. This is in the middle of 40 below zero weather.
Right.
And that's how I grew up. And so the only entertainment was church. So that was the only time we got dressed up and went out. Went to Sunday school. My mother made sure that we went to Sunday school. And like I say, it was the only thing going on. And I taught Sunday school there, because you're going out there.
You taught Sunday school.
I could read.
Right.
And so I would read for the kids. But what I'm saying is that I grew up in a very, very biblical, spiritual kind of atmosphere. And it wasn't because people were telling me that. It was things that I was discovering on my own. Like, you know, sitting there in Sunday school listening to the stories, you know, and just being wrapped up in all the, you know, stories of Jesus and the Bible and all the, all the biblical stories and all that.
And then asking your own questions and seeking
The question was, they were teaching, you know, God is everywhere.
Right.
And so I remember walking home, because we had to walk home. There was no bus or car or anything. It was like a couple of miles home across the field, and I'd be walking with my friends, and I'd be saying, where is God? Is God here? And I look around, and then just by asking that question, all of a sudden I looked up into the sky. Now, remember, this was in Calgary. Mm-hmm. It was in the winter. And there was no streetlights anywhere, and all I saw was the Milky Way as bright as it's ever been. And the minute in my mind, I said, where is God? And the next thing you know, I'm looking up at the sky. I'm looking up at the heavens. I'm looking up, and I'm seeing all sorts of things. You see comets. You see all sorts of life that's just going crazy up in the heavens. And years later, I realized when I asked that question, I got the answer right away. And then for some reason, I think it was that summer, we were running around like little natives, you know. We never wore shoes or shirts, just some raggedy-ass pants. And that was our outfit. And of course, because we had a pump to carry water, you know,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't like a shower or indoor bathroom. And so I was out in a field one time, and this car comes driving up across the field, stopped a couple of guys, and then a couple of girls were in the car. And they said, hey, you guys want to go to Bible camp? And of course, I said, yeah, what's Bible camp? And they drove us back to our house and got permission from my parents or from my mom at the time. And next thing you know, I got my little overnight bag and I'm on my way to Bible camp for 2 weeks. And it was the most incredible time of my life.
Now,
I even won the nicest guy award. I guess about a couple hundred kids there maybe, and we all get put in different little cabins and tents, and that's where the first thing they taught you is how to pray, and mm-hmm. So I learned how to pray, and then all the days we'd go with these real nice ladies or young girls, and they would sit in the field and they would read from the Bible, just Bible stories. And then we'd go in for lunch, and then we'd do some other activities. You know, we weren't bored at all.
Well, knowing what you know now, you know, years later, have your views on God and religion changed at all? Have you become more spiritual, less religious, but more spiritual?
I've never really understood the religion, you know, the rules.
The organized religion.
Yeah. I never understood Judaism, and I never understood Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand the rituals, because I was, and by the way, I guess it was some kind of evangelistic church it was. I tried to find it after that, and apparently they quit, I guess, but it was some sort of it was ordained, whatever.
Right.
You know, I just learned what I had to learn. And the thing is, when you know how to live, say,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you see that prayer works, only thing is that you have to be careful what you pray for.
Exactly.
Because the prayer works.
Right.
It works. You can't hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really do much more. Well, like the Bible says, ask. See, you won't get an answer unless you ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to know what to ask.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Because what you're going to get, you're going to get whatever you ask for.
Right.
And you know, like, and this is, and the other thing too I learned is to be, that everybody's here for a purpose. Everybody. Mm-hmm. There's nobody here, there's no one way to do anything. You know, that's why we're all individuals.
Right.
You know, that's one thing. And that's what I, you know, with this pandemic, you know, they're moaning, people are moaning and groaning, you know, because they died alone. We mm-hmm. all die alone, you know. To be there when he died, why? It doesn't matter, you know. Because, people, what they try to do, the And it's understandable because it's grief. You know, that's how you deal with grief. You know, first of all, you feel guilty because you weren't there. A lot of times, not just when they die, but you know, like I say about how they treat grandparents. You know, but I'm enjoying it. By the way, I'm enjoying it because I understand transition. Here's what I learned. Here's what I learned, and this is what I try to. Well, when I'm asked again, like you asked, so I'll tell you.
Yeah.
We're eternal beings.
Exactly.
That's what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
We are eternal beings. We have always been here in one form or another, and we will always be here in one form or another. And because that's the first thing in the Bible, you know, there's never be a beginning and no end, Alpha Omega, you know. It's a constant. And what is the definition of eternity? It's a circle. And if you think about Earth is a collection of circles.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, it's round, it's a ball, because there's no beginning and no end. And so that's what eternity is. It's a circle. It's a continuous circle. Now, because there are the number one, like there's only one you, there's only one me, there's only one of whatever species, one blade of grass. There's only one blade of grass. And a lawn can be trillions or billions, but there's only one. One is a number, you see. And what is one? One appears out of the spiritual world, which we are all one in the spiritual world. But we are definitely, we are that one spirit in the spiritual world.
Right. I think it was explained to me this way, and it was kind of a really cool analogy. And it was a book I read, and it said, Forrest Gump does not know the Jim Lovell from Apollo 13, and Apollo 13 doesn't know the lawyer dying of AIDS in Philadelphia, but Tom Hanks knows all of them.
I love that.
And Tom Hanks being the one spirit, you know, that's why you can't remember your lives or anything. But as this one spirit, you can reflect and remember, and you'll remember all your lives.
Yeah. If you need to. Mm-hmm. You need to. See, because we're in a constant state of learning. So all that information that we had before, unless you're using it in this life,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's why you get these child prodigies. You know, because all they were obviously a pianist in another life, and now they're just continuing on, you know.
Right.
Only they're learning a different, you know, they're going through life, say, like the Japanese kid where he's blind and autistic. So he's going through his life now blind and autistic. He shouldn't play the piano, play the hell out of the piano. No, everything has a purpose. Everything has a purpose. Donald Trump has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to see what it is, but it is.
Hey, did you think you'd ever live to see a day where you're seeing the laws now with legalization, and it's gotten pretty far, but yet you can do something in California that will still get somebody arrested here in Jersey?
Oh, yeah. We're evolving.
It's making progress.
Did I think?
You know what? I've never been high in my life.
I believe it.
And
you're a musician, so you got that high.
I got that high, but I was around other people that got high. You know. I also don't drink, but I've also been very curious about it. And I'm here with my son, and he's a little more experienced in that situation than I am.
Sure.
But if you come. If you ever come to Philly and Atlantic City and you want to convert me to that world, man,
only if you want to.
I would, and I would with you, absolutely. It was funny because I did a few shows in Rhode Island, and it was at a part of Rhode Island just near Newport where it becomes Massachusetts. If you can drive down the same road and pass Massachusetts and Rhode Island and go through the same border three times. And right next door, they were selling edibles in Massachusetts. Oh, yeah. And
you got one?
No, but I was curious. And me and my wife were curious. We took a ride down Newport, daytime jaunt. And we took a ride down Newport and we're like, you know what? Maybe we'll consider it coming up when we come back because it's right next. So we spent the day in Newport. We came back and it was crazy. There was a line around the building. There were cops outside directing traffic. It was like this every time this place opened up. You know, but yeah, I would have to do it under like serious supervision because I don't know. I think there's something I'm trying to keep inside that I don't want out.
Well, you know, sometimes there's a lot of people that don't need it, you know.
But are you there? Yeah, but it's benefited you in many ways.
It's what?
It has benefited you in many ways.
Totally, because what it does, it connects me with the creative. See, you talk about, you know, God is known as the creator,
mm-hmm.
the great creator. And that's what he does. He's always creating. And or she is always creating. It's always being creative. And that's what I do. You know, even when I'm sitting around, I have to do something creative. It's weird. It's like petting my dog. That's creative.
Well, what is, real quick, you know, what is a day in the life of Tommy Chong right now during this pandemic? You get up, you have a ritual, do you eat certain foods, you stay away from certain stuff? What's a day in the life for you? Are you restless before you go to bed?
I live in a beautiful, beautiful jungle, created by my artist wife. She's an artist.
Wow.
And I have a whole big flat roof on top. Where I used to grow weed. In fact, I got a couple of seeds planted now, and they haven't sprouted yet, so I might have to go get some half-grown plants. But I get up, I water my plants, I walk my dog now. I got a little puppy. My son brought him over because he misses me. I got some cameos that I got to do, but I have breakfast,
mm-hmm.
and I used to have breakfast with my wife, but now she gets up earlier than me, so we sort of like do social distancing now. and then I'll either work out or create something on the roof, like just like with me when you get older, like creating a working space. That's a day's work.
Mm-hmm.
Sweeping and cleaning up the area. That's another day's work. you know, I got chores that I do, and I just wander from room to room. I'll be looking for some, you know, this typical stoner. I'll be looking for something, and then I'll find something else that takes my attention. Or I'll find something and I'll put it away so I won't forget where I put it. And of course, I forget where I put it. I spend a lot of time just laughing at myself because I am really funny. And every once in a while, the good thing I got notes on my phone because
mm-hmm.
every time I get this flash, man, I'll write a note. And I look at my notes and things. I always have to dump them because there's so many. But I usually spend my time. Just enjoying nature. You know, we live in California, man. This time
right.
In California. Well, and then they told me that vitamin D helps with the
virus. Yeah.
So and I'm an old bodybuilder since I was 15. And so sun tanning was always part of our repeat bodybuilders, you know. And so I'll do a workout and then I'll go lay in the sun. And that's my life.
Wow.
That's what I do.
And God bless you, man. And thank you so much. You know, I can't not let you go without giving props to, is it John Paul?
Oh, JP, yeah.
JP. You know, you got a really good guy there. He's really taking care of you. And
do you know his story?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Oh, his Vietnam story?
No, I don't know anything about him.
Oh, okay. I'll just briefly, because you got to know, this guy's a war hero.
Really?
Yeah, he got shot down in Vietnam. And the reason he ended up in Vietnam was that during the Second World War, or right after the Second World War, this Jewish family in Beverly Hills got a thing, well, they better adopt a Jewish child because after the war, you know, there's a lot of orphans. Mm-hmm. And so this rich man named Cohen in Beverly Hills, the oil bank, he was very wealthy. He adopted a little Jewish kid, a little baby, but the baby died.
Oh.
And so the orphanage said, oh, well, let's just give him John Paul. And so John Paul was picked up. And when they said, the baby here? And they said, oh, yeah, here. They give the Jewish family called John Paul. And then... And back in the day, there was no red tape or nothing, you know. You just took your kid, you took them home. Mm-hmm. And so Cohen took John Paul, a French citizen, to America. And then they found out, oh, he's not Jewish. Oh, he was originally Catholic. Oh, so only the parents knew. You know, back in the day, they never told the kids. So John Paul is... siblings, brothers, grew up. They couldn't figure out why John Paul didn't have to go to synagogue and he'd go to temple.
Right.
So John Paul, he was fine. And then he turned 18 and he got a draft notice from France, because the French, if you're a French citizen, when you're born, you're immediately signed into the draft. And so that's when the family, everybody found out that John Paul was adopted.
Wait, so he was drafted by the French?
By the French, because he was born in France. He was a French citizen.
Spent his whole life in the U.S., but okay.
Yeah, so they said, well, just show up. You show up, come to Paris, you know, show up, and then that's fine. That's all we want to do. See you in person.
Right.
So he showed up in person. Then when he tried to go back to the States, he couldn't get into the States because he never had a passport. He was a French citizen.
How was he allowed out?
So they explained everything to the authorities, and they figured out the only way he can get an American passport is if he joins the service. So John Paul became a pilot. He joined the Air Force. And he became a pilot, and he got shot down in Vietnam. He took a bullet in the chest.
Ooh.
And then when they're treating the bullet wound, they give streptomycin, and it took out his hearing in both ears. So John Paul has no hearing in both ears, but he has a hearing aid that he can listen to. And so John Paul, like I said, his story, I got to do a movie about him one day. And so, because he was neglected, you know, because he was an orphan,
right.
He wasn't given anything. So he took the GI Bill that he got, and he put himself through university, and he got a couple of master's or doctorate degrees in financing. John Paul was once head of... I forget which Sanyo Bank, or he was a big executive in this bank, in the world banking. He's well known in the world banking areas. He like I said, he was a bank auditor.
Okay.
And then when all the bullshit happening with the banking and that mm-hmm. John, they retired him. You know, he got out of business. And so I met him because I needed hearing aids too. I didn't know it until I met John Paul. And then we became friends. And then my son started using JP as to help him with the surf camp. And then next thing you know, JP, we started a business called Chunkset, and we've been together ever since. It's been almost 15 years now.
Wow. Yeah, he really does have your back, though, that's great.
He's the best. He's the best. And not a bad golfer. Yeah, Wendy, his wife, is a better golfer than him. But we have a lot of fun. But JP is one of the, well, he is probably one of the heroes. Like, no one knows. You know, when they meet him, they have no idea of his Vietnam, in the war. He was in the war.
Right.
He was firing equipment to the people. Oh, man. He's a hero. And the last, it was a golf tournament. And they honored me. That was it. And it was on Veterans Day. And so I took that time to honor JP, you know, because it really was his day. No, he's incredible. Oh, hey, listen. Everybody connected with Tommy Chong. Mm-hmm. Got a story, including you.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I can't thank you enough. If I can ask you just for one favor, if I could just have you tell me that this is Tommy Chong and you're listening to WNJH Radio.
NJH Radio?
Yeah, WNJH Radio.
WNJH Radio.
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Tommy Chong. Okay. Hey, this is Tommy Chong and you're listening to WNJH Radio.
Thank you so much. Could I have that just one more time? I just want to make sure it's loud and clear. It's perfect.
Okay. Hey, this is Tommy Chong. You're listening to NJH Radio?
Yeah,
did I get that right?
WNJH Radio.
Okay. You're listening to WNJH Radio.
That's perfect.
I hope that's right.
That's fine. Do you talk to Cheech much?
Oh, yeah. Every once in a while. He's recovering from a knee operation. So.
Is he really?
So he's living out in the desert. He's doing what I'm doing, man. we're both enjoying the shit out of it.
Well, I got to ask you, you know, because it's really admirable what you're doing, because when I was trying to get you on as a guest, I was going back and forth with John Paul, and he's saying, yeah, that, you know, Tommy enjoys doing this. He enjoys helping startup stations and startup podcasters and stuff. And it's very hard to find anyone willing to do that, and when you do that, you know, hopefully I get successful and I can be at a status where you are and just pay that forward, because it's something I don't ever want to forget. I think it's just a first-class thing that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Well, what I do, my father, he was a truck driver, and he was a professional driver, you know, and he told me when I was a kid, he said, if you ever need a ride, never hesitate. Just call me. Mm-hmm. I'll pick you up. I'll come and get you no matter where you are. And I told him, yeah, thanks, Bob. And he says, just when you get to my position, you do the same thing. And so I've always remembered that. You know,
no.
People helped me when I was coming up. And so when anybody ever says, can you help me? There's not even a moment of hesitation.
I think a lot of your colleagues can learn from that too.
Well, that's what we're here to do. We're here to learn.
Tommy, thank you so much. I wish you nothing but health and more success for you guys, for you and your family, and especially for you. Okay. I can't thank you enough.
You're welcome. And get practicing right now.
Okay. We will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What do you think of that, Bob?
Yeah, that was...
That was awesome. That was awesome. Tommy, I don't think he wanted to mention this at all, but he's got a few products lined up. And I think when his manager actually texted me, he said he really doesn't want to push that. You know, but he's got a few products lined up. I'm going to try to pull them up right now, actually, but this is how selfless he was. You know, he just wanted to, you know, take my questions, whatever I had to all, you know, and just offer anything he could. He's got a website, TommyChong.com, and he's got locations. I'm wondering. Yeah, he's got his own cannabis, Tommy Chong's cannabis. And he's got most of his products are all sold in California and in Los Angeles. These are some of the names that they're the High Note in Los Angeles, the Weed in on Ventura Boulevard. These are the places where they're located. And oh my, Yuma, Arizona. He's got his product out everywhere. He's got his own little shop. Just go to TommyChong.com to find out everything he's got. And I really hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please be sure to tell your friends about the show. You can find the Dan Morrow Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and all other listening platforms where podcasts are heard. We are also syndicated via the great online radio network of Hamilton, New Jersey, WNJHradio.com. Hey, I'm on Facebook at Dan Morrow Music, as well as Instagram, also at Dan Morrow Music. And I'm on Twitter. Just look for the Dan Morrow Show for live updates, videos, updates, and all other facets of me. Just go to danmorrow.com. Bo, what are you doing? Where can they find you? Yep, Still Brendan is his Instagram page at Yep. Still, yep. Brendan, or just look up Brendan Morrow, B-R-E-N-D-A-N, Morrow. And I'll have to have you on as a guest, where we'll just talk about rock and roll music, bands, and just everything else under the sun, because nobody really got to hear much of you.
Oh, you just have to listen when the man talks.
I wanted to keep it going. I really wanted to just keep it going. I knew I'd only get 5 minutes with him. I'm at an hour and 11 and I'm sure I could have kept talking with him. I'll never forget this. I love Tommy Chong. I never asked him anything about Basketball Jones, which is everything I wanted to ask him. But he answered a lot of my stuff. I got more than I could ever expect from him. And it's amazing. Anyway, that's another one in the books. We'll see you next time.